Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers made some adjustments in game one. What more do they need to do to tie this thing up at 1-1? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. No matter how or where you get your podcast, it's always going to be free. It's never going to be behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go hang out with 17,000 Lakers fans, NBA fans, people who are there to talk about this team and engage with each other, engage with us. Thank you to everybody for all the support that channel is getting. Of course, we are there every day after games, even on weekends, especially through the playoffs. So make sure, you know, everydayers and everyone else that you are following along on the YouTube channel. Reminder, Lakers versus the Nuggets tonight, 5:30 Pacific time. You can catch every moment of game two on the SiriusXM app. That's the SXM app, and you search Lakers. We have some stuff to talk about with, you know, adjustments for game two and what else might be coming, and maybe, you know, some things that the Lakers might not think Denver could do twice, and some things that maybe the Nuggets don't think the Lakers could do again. But Andy, conversation all day on Wednesday heading into Thursday's game, into game two, was really what are the Lakers going to do with that starting lineup? And does Rui Hachimura stay in it? If he does, who leaves the starting lineup? A lot of big questions for Darvin Ham into tonight's game.
Yeah, first of all, I thought this was an interesting tweet we got from @SimplePlan90s. The blueprint for beating Denver is the same as for beating Minnesota. Rui on Jokic, like he defended Karl Anthony Towns, get back in transition, make Murray play hero ball like Anthony Edwards did, and attack the rim relentlessly. I don't think it's exactly the same in the sense that Denver is a much better team and a much better constructed team in terms of the way the roster all fits together than the Timberwolves.
Right, and Jokic is a significantly better player than Karl Anthony Towns.
Right, but I do think there is something there to just the concept of work your advantages and work the advantages hard. Like, there's obviously going to be thinking and ideation and creativity and stuff like that that comes into it for Darvin and his staff, because they are up against a really talented team and up against a really talented coach in Mike Malone. He's got a really good staff himself. But at the same time, don't overcomplicate it and don't try to out-clever it until clever becomes truly necessary. Like, for example, going way too small to begin a game when it was obvious you needed to go bigger.
I think I agree with you. And, you know, both of us were surprised that they did it. I think part of the reason we talked a little bit about this for Wednesday's show following game one was, you know, this was something that, you know, the idea that you would take Hachimura and put him on Jokic is something that, you know, they had in their bag. I mean, Rui said after the game, the coaches didn't just like make this up on the spot. They told him this was something they would likely go to and be prepared.
He literally said during our preview, this is something they're going to do. If we can anticipate this,
yes,
I promise you, Mike Malone, who also said afterwards that Rui being on Jokic is nothing they weren't prepared for or nothing they haven't seen before.
Right.
And it's just about, again, trying to find ways to leverage the things that work.
I think what they were hoping to do is not have to go to it quite so quickly. It's quite so early in the series. See if they could get away with what would be considered more standard looks, more traditional looks. You know, one of the things that makes the playoffs so fascinating is, you know, these series are filled with, you know, it's a move, it's a counter move, it's whatever. And, you know, you have a list of 10 things that you think you can try and deploy, and you know what, I'm making up a number here, obviously, but the point being, you you don't there you you want to kind of there's a cadence, I think, a lot of times to how coaches want to use stuff and when they want to use stuff in a series. And so much of the Hachimura stuff, and in terms of how you go forward, I think is dependent on how effective you think it can continue to be. And how often, if you start Rui, how often can you have him on Jokic? Can you do it the entire game? Can you do it for some of the, and so like these questions I think are really interesting. So I will start with,
sure.
One, I mean, really, with one of them for you.
Okay. Really quick though. I mean, with just that idea of like how quickly you go to an idea, how quickly you show that idea, something like that. I understand what you're saying, but if that is something, if at all, the Lakers were looking to, I guess, avoid showing that early, then that to me would be an example of overthinking this. I know you're not, but the point I'm looking to make is sometimes the things that you do are the things that you do because you have no other choice. Because let's just say you're looking to try to weaponize Rui that way as something you sort of keep in your back pocket. Who the hell else is going to be doing this if it's not AD? You know what I mean? Like
it's one of those things. For example, like, you know, if you go back and you start to break it, and we had slightly different reactions to the way that, our interpretation of what Denver was doing after, you know, in those moments when Hachimura was guarding, because essentially what it did was allowed AD to roam so that Jokic was essentially being guarded by Hachimura while he also had to be aware of where AD was and what it was a quasi double team and a very different look. And I thought that, you know, those sequences, for example, where he was sort of cleared out and they were backing down Hachimura and all that, that to me took them out of the offense that they were doing that was so effective over the course of the game. I felt like they were started to play differently in order to attack a matchup. I will ask you, how long do you think the Lakers can go with sort of, or expect it to look like it did last night, or excuse me, you know, Wednesday night in game one? Tuesday night in game one.
I think the answer is both it can be effective for the entirety of this series and that it has to be effective for the entirety of this series because they don't have a lot of other options to try. Unless you're going to go with Anthony Davis is the primary defender on Nikola Jokic for the overwhelming majority of the time they're on the floor together, which presents drawbacks just in terms of, you know, potential foul trouble for AD and, you know, the tax that it takes on him physically, but also too, you don't get to weaponize AD as a roamer, as a weak side shot blocker. Cause like when you are guarding Nikola Jokic, that is your assignment. You cannot do anything else. There's no multitasking when you are guarding Nikola Jokic. So, you know, there's an element of practical to this. But if I'll put it this way, I think it can be effective because I think Rui Hachimura is good in those type of defensive assignments. He's very strong. He is good at being a physical defender. But I would also say that while it's not going to be the only thing they do, it's not going to be just AD guards and primarily Rui guards and primarily nothing else. But the truth is, if it's not effective as a means of trying to either slow Jokic or just take the offense for Denver somewhat out of rhythm, the Lakers likely can't win this series.
Yeah, maybe. And and we'll talk more about this after the break. And the big reason I ask that question is because I am very skeptical that Denver won't be able, especially a Basque. I mean, we talk about this with LeBron a lot too, that LeBron is a basketball cyborg. You can throw something at him maybe about 20 years in. You probably can't throw anything at him that he hasn't seen. You might be able to throw something at him now that he can't overcome just because the physical tools might have diminished just enough. But I guarantee you, he's seen that thing or thought about that thing that you're throwing at him.
LeBron could actually, this would actually be really fun to watch in a game that doesn't matter. But LeBron could probably, from defense, vocally run another team's sets.
I guarantee you.
Absolutely. Just by calling it out exactly as it's going to happen. Like, it would be a fun thing to try to see. I don't exactly know how you would do it from a logistic standpoint.
Like, mic him up and narrate, and then they're going to go here and this, and then like he could have, like, he's seen everything. Jokic,
it would be like a preseason game. That would be really fun to just mic up LeBron and have him basically narrate a game as it's going, and then especially after the fact, match up his audio tracks with what went on. That could be really fun.
Totally. But Jokic is a lot like that. Jokic is a savant in that way. And so they will program against this.
Sure.
Quickly. And again, I don't think it's that complicated. So I want to talk to you about maybe how the Lakers counter the counter. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by eBay Motors, and for a championship team, it's all about making sure every player is a perfect fit. It's the same when it comes to your vehicle. Every part needs to be just right. And so the next time you need parts and accessories, head to eBay Motors with eBay Guaranteed Fit. You can make sure every part you need fits right the first time around. Just add your ride to My Garage and then look for the green check to know that the part will fit or your money back. And just like in sports, confidence is the name of the game when you shop on eBay Motors. And with over 122 million parts to choose from, it's a lot of parts. You will be back in the game in no time. After all, it's easy to bring home a win when the right parts are guaranteed. So get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices on ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, you know, and I'm not the only person who is, you know, asking these questions and looking around. There's a plenty of stuff that's been written about it over the course of the last 24, 48 hours about this and what Denver might do to counter, you know, this move from LA. And I think, you know, it starts with facing up Jokic. I think it starts with putting Hachimura in the pick and roll, choosing which players you use to put him in the pick and roll and forcing switches and all that kind of stuff. Sure. I think, you know, the counters to this are a relatively straightforward. I think the odds of this working effectively again are reasonably limited. And I think that is okay. And to borrow a line from our friend John Ireland, am I crazy? Because I am starting to think that the Lakers' ability to quote unquote shut down Jokic or stop Jokic or whatever is not where they should be looking. I think it's a matter of how do you make sure that Bruce Brown and KCP don't do what they did in game one. Make sure that Jamal Murray is, instead of being well over 50% as a shooter, somewhere in the mid 40s, like stuff like that. I think you just, I don't think you fight against the notion that Jokic is just going to put up, you know, gigantic dominant numbers. And I understand in asking the question, part of what allows those other guys to be efficient and be good is because Jokic can do so much of the things that he does. But I mean, how do you feel about that as sort of an ethos for this series, that don't get wrapped up in the idea of how you know stop Nikola Jokic? You use up your Rui Hachimura files on him, try to maximize Anthony Davis the best way you can, and just accept that Jokic is going to put up just silly numbers throughout the entire series.
Well, it's about how much difficulty is involved in putting up those silly numbers and how much of the silly numbers are points versus assists. Ideally, you'd like to try to lower one against the other. You know, you'd like to keep him as more of a scorer or more of an assist guy as opposed to
both
going eight bleep with both, as well as killing you on the boards and actually being reasonably effective defensively. Like, you know, Jokic went ham in this game. You'd like to make him a little more Canadian bacon, I guess. Like, you got to find some way to just make him a slightly lesser
version. Which is just ham, by the way. I understand what you're getting at, but I've always you know, the Canadian bacon.
It's thing. It's the less popular version of ham. Oh. Otherwise, they wouldn't call it Canadian bacon and try to sneak it up on you.
You got to like gussy it up and make everybody think they're eating bacon. No, it makes obvious. More sense. I apologize. I didn't understand what you were getting at.
Yeah, it's obvious that breed of ham is ashamed of itself, and that's why it dresses itself up with a different name.
It's the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim of ham.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And, I gotcha. And okay.
Nobody respects the Angels or that ham. Apologies to the Locked On Angels hosts, who are terrific and also brothers, by the way. But like, you just have to try to make it as difficult as possible in the same way that the Nuggets are not, I don't think, going into this series thinking, how do we shut down Anthony Davis? The answer is they likely can't. And, you know, if LeBron is able to play at the most peak version of himself in season 20 over the majority of this series, it's going to be difficult to shut him down too. Like, we're at a stage right now where the teams are really good, the talent is really high, and you just have to try to trim down on those percentages of the ways that they can kill you. But it's also, but this also gets back to really quickly why I have harped a lot on Darvin's decision to go small, because part of the reason that Denver put the Lakers in a position where they had to claw through so much of it, and where Jamal Murray was able to get hot offensively, the where Michael Porter could just shoot effortlessly because he's going up against defenders 5 to 6 inches shorter than him, the way the Lakers kept ending up in defensive mismatches because they were just too small. That's part of it too.
It is.
The game tilts differently if the Lakers put themselves, and you know, and look, this is going to lead into the discussion about D'Angelo Russell, because
next question. Who if Rui starts, who doesn't? So yeah, we'll go to that next.
I do think that is a big part of it. The Lakers spent a lot of their energy just digging themselves, frankly, out of a hole that their coach put them in. And it's not
their coach put them in it and their play. They put themselves in, but Darvin didn't help. There's no question.
Right. I mean, again, like I said in Wednesday's show, I don't blame Darvin because the team, I guess, collectively decided that they were uninterested in playing transition defense. And Darvin is correct that some of the rebounds that Denver got against them were about, you know, not leveraging their own physicality as best as possible, not moving as quickly to put a body on a body.
They needed to play better with more energy and more force.
Right. There's some of it was we are shrimps compared to the other guys out here getting these rebounds. We're not going to win that battle. So I do think part of this will improve if they just put themselves from the jump in the best position possible. I do think that's a big part of it.
It is one of these series, and like, you know, I don't think there's a secret weapon lurking on the bench for the Lakers. Because that was one of the other things I talked about earlier in the show. It's like, you know, what are the next moves? And like there will be much smaller things that coaching staffs do about who they put into certain screens and which actions and you know, how they deploy guys on the floor. And do you switch here? Do you not switch here? I think the Lakers were caught going under screens that they had no intention of going under.
Dennis Schroeder kept looking back at the bench. I think at the coaching staff, unhappy with.
Well, yeah. I mean, the coverages weren't, there were problems with the cover. The Lakers were getting rubbed out on screens, I think, more aggressively than they were expecting, and the communication between the two Lakers that were out there defending in any given situation, especially at the beginning of the game, wasn't very good. And so I think that was part of the problem. There were a couple times when they just, you know, the execution of whatever it was they were trying to do was obviously not there, and you could see it on their faces, and that has to get better. You know, there's always that balance between do something different and do what you are trying to do and actually do it better, mm-hmm. you know, actually execute on what it is that you want to do. But I, you know, you look at the bench and, you know, could you find a minute or two for Wenyen Gabriel? Okay, maybe, but it probably comes at the expense of Jared Vanderbilt. So, you know, he who only played 10 minutes in the game. And so, you know, I don't think, you know, you don't see Troy Brown Jr. or Malik Beasley or Max Christie or something. You know, Mo Bamba's not even available. So that's not a choice.
Stop yelling at us to play Mo Bamba.
This is, by the way, our daily reminder that Mo Bamba, it's not that Darvin won't play Mo Bamba. Mo Bamba can't play.
This is my hell. I just getting yelled at on Cam on Twitter at Cam Brothers about Darvin Ham not playing a guy who is not active right now because he's not healthy. Like,
I think maybe they're saying that Mo isn't trying to heal himself mentally because he knows he's not going to play anyway. What's the point? But anyway, all right. So let's get to the big part, the third or the fourth or the second. I don't know which part of this equation we're at, but the part where you say if Rui Hachimura starts, who sits? Because the Lakers will not be allowed to play a sixth person in their starting lineup because the league just doesn't want them to win. So we'll ask that question next. All right, your candidates here, Andy, and a reminder, the Lakers will be facing the Denver Nuggets. 5:30 Pacific time is the tip. SXM app, that's the SiriusXM app. You search Lakers, and you can listen to that bad boy on your satellite radio. Your choices here, I would think, are Dennis Schroeder and D'Angelo Russell to move to the bench if Hachimura, as expected, I think, enters the starting lineup for game two.
Or Jared Vanderbilt. I could see the case for Jared Vanderbilt just if they're looking to leverage defensive versatility and also if they want to try to keep more scoring punch off the bench.
Yes, I could see that too. I guess that is an option.
Denver.
So I'll rephrase. Assuming Rui starts, then you send send either Russell or Schroeder to the bench. I think the assumption from most people is that Rui will start.
Sure.
But I could see them, yes, I could see them going with Vanderbilt. The problem there is then you're allowing Denver to do what the Lakers have done, which is basically ignore somebody and make Anthony Davis's life a lot harder.
Absolutely. But the point being, one of the two of them would be the person that you put into the starting lineup, which would lead to Dennis Schroeder, who typically comes off the bench, or D'Angelo Russell, who played pretty badly in game one on both sides of the ball. And also, he defensively is a tough series for him. Like, there's nobody, as much as D'Lo, I think, has been in a team scheme defensively fine for the Lakers, he's not been hurting them. He's not a great individual defender. And this is a series where you can't hide him. Like, you have to guard all five guys. He can only guard KCP. There's nobody else that you can put him on. And KCP's taxing. You know, he runs the entire game. He's a really good cutter. Like, you have to be paying a lot of attention. That question of D'Lo is raised in a report by our buddy Dave McMenamin over at ESPN. This is interesting. Quote, what's not so obvious is whom out of the Lakers starting backcourt from game one, Schroeder, Russell, makes more sense to come off the bench. Russell, who shot just 4 for 11 and played only 9 minutes in the second half after registering a plus minus of minus 23 in 17 first half minutes, would naturally be under consideration. However, multiple team sources told ESPN there is concern the team could, quote, lose the 27-year-old point guard if he views the adjustment as a demotion after starting every other game this postseason. Schroeder has already shown he can be comfortable as a substitute, as he didn't start until game six against Golden State. Russell got up extra shots after the game on the court while still in uniform.
All right. Stuff like this, I don't want to get too sidetracked on, you know, I do want to get to this question of like who actually is going to start and who should. Reports like this are always fascinating because, you know, Dave specifies team sources, multiple team sources. He's obviously not making this up. And you would think that means people on the team, whether players, executives, you know, coaches, whatever.
And Dave's really plugged into the team.
Yeah, very much so. I always wonder, like, this to me, when I saw that, had three purposes, either to get D'Angelo Russell, you know, a little bit more fired up, like, you know, to kind of motivate him a little bit, like, hey, we might not be able to put you in the lineup, you know, because of what it is, you know, the second option is it is to make it so you can do that because you've kind of put it out there that D'Angelo Russell is going to be, he's going to be pouty and he's going to be all these other things. And you'll lose him if you don't. So now it's on D'Angelo, who's going to be a free agent, to just suck it up and take it with a smile. The third thing is they're trying to, could be that they're trying to devalue D'Angelo Russell going into the offseason in when they're not really that interested or on bringing him back at the number that they want to do. So either they're trying to devalue him around the league or they're trying to devalue him to this team and say, well, look, you can't count on the guy to even be a team player in the playoffs. So my mind went to all
three. Well, that's messaging, by the way, also to fans who expect D'Angelo Russell to be brought back.
Right. It's all of that. Like, you are preemptively coming up with the narrative for why you wouldn't bring this guy back when maybe it's just that you don't want to give him $25 million or whatever it might cost to keep him around. Those are talking points perhaps to explore in depth at another time. But that's where my mind went. I think realistically, in terms of how you use this series, I would start him one more time at least. Mm-hmm. The Nuggets are in a similar situation with Jamal Murray, for example. Like, he is a really good offensive player, better than D'Angelo Russell. I'm not trying to say they're the same, but a guy who gets picked on defensively. And, part of why the Lakers wanted to play five viable offensive players in game one and would certainly want to in game two is to force both him and Michael Porter Jr. to defend the entire game. Sure. The Nuggets are obviously going to do that with D'Lo. He's going to have to play.
Yeah.
And you need his spacing. You need his offensive creativity, because particularly if the Nuggets come up with some counters to make Anthony Davis's life a little harder, part of that safety valve the Lakers have, the release valve that they have, is Russell's creativity, is his flexibility as a shooter, and all that stuff. And there have been too many sequences in this playoffs where he has carried them for 3 or 4 minutes at a time offensively. Both as a doing point guardy stuff and as a shooter. I just think walking away from that, try to figure out ways to protect him better defensively if you can. D'Angelo's got to do just a better job and really dial in as much as he possibly can. But I just don't see this as a cut and dried kind of thing. I thought the commentary around it was fascinating on a bunch of levels, but for the practical, would I pull him from the lineup in game two? My answer is no.
No, my answer is no as well. I mean, as far as the idea of losing D'Lo or not, I mean, there obviously could be ulterior motives to that being floated. And to be honest, if it's really more about that and sort of the four-dimensional chess of D'Lo this offseason, I would say that's putting the cart way ahead of the horse and frankly just getting sidetracked by the wrong thing. If it's about really a concern with losing D'Lo, I would say that it's something that should be considered in terms of trying to find the best way to keep his confidence and his engagement high. Flip side is, if he doesn't play well, it's not a reason to avoid eventually moving him to the bench. And if D'Lo ultimately wants to pout in reaction to this in a contract year, with the team that can afford to pay him the most and frankly probably needs to pay him the most in a really high profile situation, I mean, that's a choice. It's not one I would recommend D'Lo make, but, career to do with what he wants.
I just wonder what it means, because, Russell has sat multiple fourth quarters, not entire four, but, multiple stretch runs of games. And I have, pull the curtain back. You and I are not in the building. We have not gone to playoff games or record. We certainly don't travel. Our recording schedule is such that if we want to try to record a show after a game, we need to be home to do it. Unless I'm missing something, and certainly nobody's reported that Russell has been pouty not playing certain fourth quarters. He tends not to play in fourth quarters when he doesn't play well, when he's 1 of 10 from the floor. And when he's playing well, he plays. I thought that was a weird one, to be honest with you. And separate from, I thought it was a strange thing for the team in whatever form, whoever did it to, you know, multiple people, I guess, to put out there. For a group that has been very drama and headline free for a long time now, to say that about arguably your third or fourth best player, you know, your only other guy on the team has been an all-star.
He's going to be aware of it, and it may be a way of just getting his attention and sort of snapping him back into a place they need him to be in after a rough game. But like for the time being, I think it's simpler to play Schroeder off the bench because it's a role he's far more used to. Like D'Lo doesn't really play a ton of minutes with the second unit. And in particular, he does not play a lot of minutes without Anthony Davis.
I will say that, and not to cut you off, but like, I will say you use the word second unit. It's a very different deal though in the playoffs. The second, you know, they essentially played seven players. So the second unit is, you know, it's an extra guard at Schroeder and it's whatever big they bring off.
Okay.
The
but
that makes a difference in terms of the combinations and this and that and how you would expect to play. Because if Russell came off the bench, he would still likely be playing mostly with starters.
Right, maybe, but what he wouldn't be playing as many minutes is with LeBron. I mean, with AD.
Probably not.
And I think it is not by accident that the two of them play together a lot, in part because offensively, I think they often have really good chemistry, and in part because defensively, it's helpful to have AD on the floor when D'Lo's on the floor. You can just bump up Schroeder's minutes off the bench if need be without really disrupting much of anything. But we've also seen D'Lo is very – seen too many games where, like you said, he's been important not just for this team with winning, but also in having good chemistry with this starting five, or, you know, with Austin Reeves, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and then I guess whoever, you know, starter number five would be. I think it's too soon to pull that cord, but ultimately it's on D'Lo to just play better. On both ends, but I think there have been too many games where he's played well to just automatically assume that he's not the right guy for the starting five. But I will say, I think this is the most challenging series for him, I think, on both sides of the ball.
I agree. Absolutely.
Like this is one where D'Angelo's deficiencies, I think, could become most illuminated because there's nowhere to hide him defensively if you're looking to do that at all. And he's up against a lot of really good wing defenders.
The Denver Nuggets are arguably the best team in basketball. I mean, there's a reason for it, you know, and it, had they not been so good throughout the vast majority of the season, we might have been, you know, sort of paying more attention. They were not part of the conversation relative to other teams because they weren't making big moves at the deadline. They weren't doing other, and they were so far out ahead. There wasn't much to talk about. It was really
their star doesn't seek.
No, like, it's like, is Jokic the MVP or not? It was really the, but there was very little about the Nuggets because there was no, are they going to fall into second place? Are they going to be caught? Like, and so it's not that I think they were disrespected.
I think they were, but there was no story.
I don't think they were disrespected in the sense that people didn't think they were good. I think they were disrespected in the sense that they weren't part of the conversation. People weren't going out of their way to remind everyone, oh, by the way, as much as we talk about Kevin Durant and the Suns and the shiny new thing over here, the Denver Nuggets deserve everybody's respect. I think they do because
it's accurate. There have been so much time spent detracting from Jokic's worthiness for a third straight MVP that it bled into people talking about his past playoff failures, you know, not acknowledging that those often happened when he was missing key guys, which led to people.
It's also not a playoff award, but whatever.
Right. But it also, I think that in turn led to people looking to detract from Denver because they figured, once you get to the playoffs,
I guess, that, you know, I, that's fair.
I mean, Phoenix was favored in that series over Denver, which to me was ridiculous.
They were.
I believe they were.
I didn't look. I would not have assumed that.
I'll say this. More analysts picked them, if nothing else. I don't know the Vegas lines, but they were picked more by analysts.
I can tell you one analyst who didn't. this guy.
I thought that was insane.
Yeah, but there's no team that I thought was going to beat the Nuggets. You know, through certainly until you know this matchup potentially. Anyway, I think Russell will end up starting, and I think Hachimura will end up starting, but we'll see what, if anything, the Lakers, both of these teams do, because you know the Lakers shot 40-something% from three, probably not going to do that again. But you know, you look at it. I mentioned it earlier in the show. Bruce Brown, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, combined for more than 40 points. Probably not going to happen again either. Both teams at 55% shooting. Maybe it might happen again. The Lakers, you know, dominated inside at the paint from a percentage standpoint, 82% from there's so many numbers here. And that's why that game was ultimately quite close. So we'll see. It has a lot of potential to be a 7-game series with, or at the very least, however many games with a lot of close ones. Lakers looking to tie things up at 1. Go to the SXM app on Sirius. 5:30 is the tip. Search Lakers and you can find the game. We will be back following game 2 with all the analysis and get you ready to get into the weekend as well as the Lakers come home. See everybody next time.